So it's Truth for Today Bible Class. And this is August the 12th, 1980, Tuesday night. And we are ready to start in our first section in the 14th chapter of 2 Samuel. The 14th chapter of 2 Samuel. We've been studying about David. David and his misfortunes and mistakes and so on, as well as the good things that he did. A man highly approved of God. There's a difference between making mistakes intentionally and doing them unintentionally. 2 Samuel 14, page 428. In the chapter before, we have, of course, where Absalom killed his brother, half-brother, Amnon, because of this kid, his half-sister. And Absalom went away, left, after doing that. And so, in verse 39, the last one, and the soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead. Now, here's a series of mistakes. Remember that under ordinary rules among nations of that time, that the monarch, the king, was above the law. But it was not so in Israel. The law that was given in Sinai was just as valid for the king as it was for the lowest subject in the kingdom. No difference. And David had not done his duty. Now, when Amnon raped his sister Tamar, I believe that was his name, or did I miss the name? What was her name? He should have been put to death. That was the law. But you see, David did nothing. Well, then, the next step is that Absalom, who is a full brother of this girl, kills Amnon. Well, then there was another murder. And Absalom should have been executed. And David did nothing. And so, chapter 14 tells us the problems that come from all of that. Now, Joab here is spoken of. He is the commander-in-chief of David's army. But remember, he had once been associated with the house of Saul, so don't trust him too far. And Jonathan should have been David's commander-in-chief, but he failed. He loved David as his own soul, but that wasn't enough. He stayed in his father's house and took it easy and comfortable and so on, while David was an outcast and hunted in the wilderness. If he had gone out and suffered with David, he might have reigned with David. And everybody thought that he would be commander-in-chief of the army, but he died along with his father in battle, in disgrace. Didn't go quite far enough. Now Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was toward Absalom. So he has a scheme. And Joab sent to Tekoa and fetched thence a wise woman and said unto her, I pray thee, feign thyself or pretend thyself to be a mourner, and put on now mourning apparel, and anoint not thyself with oil, but be a woman that hath a long time mourned for the dead. And come to the king, and speak on this manner unto him. So Joab put the words in her mouth. How can you imagine seeing a man putting words into the mouth of a woman? Well, you see there, actually, you can't take that very literally, can you? In other words, we would say, he told her what to say. And when the woman of Tekoa spake to the king, she fell on her face to the ground, and did obeisance, said, "Help, O king." And the king said unto her, "What aileth thee?" And she answered, "I am indeed a widow woman, and mine husband is dead. And thy handmaid had two sons, and they two strove together in the field, and there was none to part them, but the one smote the other and slew him. And behold, a whole family is risen against thine handmaid. And they said, Deliver him that smote his brother, that we may kill him, for the life of his brother whom he slew. And we will destroy the heir also. And so they shall quench my coal which is left, and shall not leave to my husband neither name nor remainder upon the earth." Now you can see how closely this relates to David's father. The two sons, and one has killed the other. That's a trap for David, and he fell into it too. And the king said unto the woman, "Go to thine house, and I will give thee charge concerning thee, and I will give charge concerning thee." And the woman of Tekoa said unto the king, "My lord, O king, the iniquity be on me, and on my father's house, and the king and his throne be guiltless." And the king said, "Whosoever saith aught unto thee, bring him to me, and he shall not touch thee any more." Then said she, "I pray thee, let the king remember the Lord thy God, that thou wouldst not suffer the revenger of blood to destroy any more, lest he destroy my son." And he said, "As the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of thy son fall to the earth." Then a woman said, she's getting around to the point, "Let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak one word unto my lord the king." He said, "Go on." And the woman said, "Wherefore then hast thou brought such a thing against the people of God? For the king doth speak this thing as one which is holy, in that the king doth not fetch home again his banished Absalom. For we must need die, as water spilled on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Neither doth God respect any person, yet doth he devise means, that his banished be not expelled from him. Now therefore, that I am come to speak of this thing unto my lord the king, is because the people made me afraid. And thy handmaid said, I will now speak unto the king. It may be that the king will perform the request of his handmaid, or the king will hear me to deliver his handmaid out of the hand of the man that would destroy me and my son together out of the inheritance of God. Then thine handmaid said, The word of my lord the king shall now be comfortable, for as an angel of God, so is my lord the king, to discern good and bad. Therefore the Lord thy God will be with thee." That was a pretty well-devised trap. Now you see, I didn't mention the first thing that David got into these and so on. You see, David himself had sinned, in the case of Uriah the Hittite and Bathsheba. So he would have hesitated if he had done anything to Amnon, because somebody might say, "Well, this is what you did." And then because he didn't do anything to him, he couldn't do anything to Absalom. He's just getting deeper in the web all the time. Then the king answered and said to the woman, "Hide not from me, I pray thee, the thing that I shall ask thee." And the woman said, "Let my lord the king now speak." And the king said, "Is not the hand of Joab with thee in all this?" He smelled the mouse, didn't he? And the woman answered and said, "As thy soul liveth, my lord the king, none can turn to the right hand or to the left from aught that thy word, what my lord the king has spoken. For thy servant Joab, he bade thee, and he put all these words in the mouth of thine handmaid, to fetch about this form of speech, that thy servant Joab done this thing. And my lord is wise, according to the wisdom of an angel of God, to know all things that are in the earth." Well, we don't have to repeat much of that, so on. She is at least flattering David, and there's a lot of truth in it. And he was wise enough to know that Joab must have been back all the way. All right, that scene closes. And the king said unto Joab, "Behold now, I have done this thing. Go therefore, bring the young man Absalom again." And Joab fell to the ground on his face, and bowed himself, and thanked the king. And Joab said, Today thy servant knoweth that I have found grace in thy sight, my Lord, O King, and that the king hath fulfilled the request of his servant. So Joab arose, went to Geshur, and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. One of the biggest mistakes ever made. And the king said, let him turn to his own house, and let him not see my face. So Absalom returned to his own house, and saw not the king's face. David wasn't very faithful. But in all Israel, there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. Now you don't very often use the word beauty in case of a man, do you? Very, very seldom. But here it is. Satan was the most beautiful of all God's creation at that time. And the most wise. He had pride because of it. From the sole of his foot, even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. Probably hadn't been playing any rough games like football and stuff. And when he pulled his head, that is, cut his hair, for it was at every year's end that he pulled it, because the hair was heavy on him, therefore he pulled it. Now he didn't shave his head, just say like a Nazarite or something like that, but it says the hair was heavy on his head. So he relieved some of the weight and so on. Once a year he'd wipe some of it off. He weighed that hair of his head at 200 shekels after the king's weight. I haven't any idea how much that weighed. A few years ago, when women were wearing false hair and so on, probably that had bought a pretty good price. In fact, there are some women that got hard up and cut their hair and sold it. And when they got broke, a lot of them you see on the streets now are broke. I just put that in fresh. And unto Absalom there were born three sons and one daughter, whose name was Tamar. She was a woman of fair countenance. And our notes say he evidently outlived his sons. So Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem and saw not the king's face. Didn't get to see his father all the time. Therefore Absalom sent for Joab. He's always wanted to help him with his troubles. To have sent him to the king. But he would not come to him. And when he sent again the second time, he would not come. Joab just didn't go. Didn't accept the invitation. Therefore he, that is, Absalom said unto his servants, see, Joab's field is near mine, and he hath barley there. Go and set it on fire. That's a dirty trick, isn't it? Set a field on fire. And Absalom's servant set the field on fire. Then Joab arose and came to Absalom unto his house and said unto him, well, wherefore have thy servant set my field on fire? Now, let's don't be too liberal. Did they burn the field? We have an expression like this in Hebrew. A lot of people try to take it literally, you know, about thorns and thistles and so on. The field is nigh to being burnt. Well, they burn the thorns and thistles so they can plant the field. So, remember, people use idiomatic expressions back in those days like we do now. I like putting words in our mouth a little bit, and then you're setting the field on fire. Well, if you start taking literally things that I said, we'd be in an awful mess in a short time. Because we speak an idiomatic language too, but don't realize it. You realize if you start a foreign language, then you try to put our idiom over into theirs and they don't have a parallel. Then you gotta go clear around the bush to get it expressed. Some of the things you say them literally in a foreign language, they wouldn't have any idea what it means. Because they wouldn't have that kind of an idiom. They try to take it literally, and it didn't make sense. Then Joab arose and came to Absalom's house and said, "Why is this set my field on fire?" And Absalom answered Joab, "Behold, I send unto thee, saying, Come hither, that I may send thee to the king to say, Wherefore am I come from Geshur? It had been good for me to have been there still. Now, therefore, let me see the king's face. If there be any iniquity in me, let him kill me." So they might well not come down here to Jerusalem, but can't see the king. Now remember, Absalom has something in his mind conspired to kill his brother. And for a little while, they thought he'd killed all the king's sons, but he hadn't. So Joab came to the king and told him. And when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king killed Absalom. And that's chapter 14. Laying the groundwork for a little drama. And it came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him, acting like he's the king. Important men at that time would have chariots and have men to run before him when he went anywhere, so none of the crowds and so on would obstruct his passage, the streets and the roads would be cleared. So Absalom is taking quite a bit to himself. And Absalom rose up early. He was an early riser. Now, of course, we have a lot of young men today that aren't quite such early risers, maybe as Absalom was. And stood beside the way of the gate. And, of course, the gate would be opened about daybreak in the morning, the gate of the city. And it was so that when any man that had a controversy came to the king for judgment, then Absalom called unto him and said, "Of what city art thou?" And he said, "Thy servant is one of the tribes of Israel." And Absalom said unto him, "See, thy matters are good and right, but there is no man deputed to the king to hear thee." Absalom said, "Moreover, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come unto me, and I would do him justice." I think his father is the king, and he's doing that. He ought to be spanked, then. And it was so that when any man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. They didn't even get to the king away. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Now don't take that literally, can you? If we stop and look at all of these idiomatic expressions and so on, it takes us a long time to get through. And yet, we don't so often realize when we're reading. In fact, I think it would be a great work for somebody, if he could do it, to write a book on Hebrew idioms. Remember that the New Testament is written in Greek, but written really in Hebrew idiom, a way of speaking. It shows that you have to know the language at all. It shows that the thinking is in Hebrew, but it's spoken in Greek. And of course, it's funny when we hear some people of another language trying to use language, English, and they try to speak it in their way and get the order in their way. And so they turn the corner around. Different ways of speaking like that. And he stole the hearts of the men of Israel. And it came to pass after 40 years that Absalom said unto the king, now what, 40 years? David only reigned 40 years altogether. But what age was David crowned king? I think probably there's a note in here, if I'm not mistaken, in verse 7. Yeah, from David's anointing, what has it to do with me? So it isn't too near the end of his reign after all. because he spent, how many years did David spend trying to get away from Saul, keep all of his clutches? Any idea? Now, just for fun, let's turn back to 1 Samuel 13:1. Your translation is very poor. You don't have any notes here to help you either. I only know about one English translation that has this really according to the Hebrew. Now it says here, Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him thousands and so on. Actually, it should read, Saul began to reign when 1 year old, and he reigned over Israel 2 years. Now, there's another one you need to figure out, isn't it? Have you ever heard the answer to that one? Go back to chapter 10, verse 6. And the Spirit of the Lord will come upon thee, Samuel talking to David, to Saul, and thou shalt prophesy with them, that is a prophet, and shalt be turned into another man. A new man, another man. All right. Now, as a new man, he was 1 year old when he began to reign. And it says he reigned 2 years over Israel. But he actually reigned 40. What about the other 38? Well, you see, God rejected him. Yeah, they didn't count the 38. All right, now. And that 38 years was almost all of it spent in trying to hunt down David. Because he had been anointed king. And Saul knew very well. He admitted it. And Jonathan knew it too. David had been anointed king. See, that begins to put a different complexion on all. So David must have suffered in the wilderness close to 38 years, like Israel did after their rejection at Kadesh Barnea. This number 38 comes up more than that in the Bible too, if you start looking through the numbers. Well, we have to stop once in a while. These explain a lot of things. So, verse 7 again, chapter 15. And it came to pass after 40 years that Absalom said unto the king, I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow, which I vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. Now, do you think, for a minute, that Absalom had vowed some vow unto the Lord and had to go and worship over in Hebron? Do you think so? The way he's been doing, killed his brother, plotted against his father, and so on, you think that he was in worship? Well, that's baiting his father again. So he's fooling his father, trying to make him think that he's real religious as he says he is. And it looks like it. David took the bait. For thy servant vowed a vow while I abode at Geshur in Syria, saying, if the Lord shall bring thee again indeed to Jerusalem, then will I serve the Lord. I don't think he ever said it. And the king said unto him, go in peace. So he rose and went to Hebron. But Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as ye hear the sound of the trumpet, then ye shall say, Absalom reigneth in Hebron. There's the plot. And with Absalom went 200 men out of Jerusalem that were called, and they went in their simplicity, and they knew not anything. They went with him, but they didn't know what it was all about. And Absalom sent for Ahithophel. The Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Gilead, while he offered sacrifices, and the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually, with Absalom. Now, can you tell me who this Ahithophel was? And why he would be eager to get in a plot against David? Anybody have an idea? He was the grandfather of Bathsheba. Did that tell you anything? And David had wronged his granddaughter. And he'd like to get the life of David. The plot thickens, doesn't it? And so he's going to be an advisor. He had been an advisor for David. Until David sinned and they parted company. Now Absalom is going to get the hit of fell for the be his counselor. Now, Ahithophel is spoken of in the Psalms, and it is repeated by the Lord at the Last Supper, that he that ate with him, I can't quote the exact words, lifted up his heel against me. And of course, it's referring to Judas. So then Ahithophel was really a type of Judas. He turned against David, and Judas turned against the Lord. Well, finally, there came a messenger to David, saying, and doesn't tell where he came from, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. A very short message. But David understood it. And David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, arise, let us flee, for we shall not else escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly, and bring evil upon us, and smite the city with the edge of the sword. Another figure of speech, smite the city with the edge of the sword. Can you imagine? Really, the word edge and mouth. Sometimes that idiom is used, for the sword being thirsty for blood. And of course, the city stands for the inhabitants. When David wrote Psalm 51, he says, I have sinned against heaven. There's another idiom. Heaven standing for the one, the great God who was there. And the king's servant said unto the king, behold, thy servants are ready to do whatsoever thy lord the king shall appoint. They're all ready to go. And the king went forth, and all his household after him. And the king left 10 women, which were concubines, or wives, to keep the house. And the king went forth, and all the people after him, and tarried in a place that was far off. Not too awfully far off, as you read on here after that. And all his servants passed on beside him, and all the Cherethites, and all the Philistites, and the Gittites, 600 men, which came after him from Gath, passed on before the king. Where's Gath, and what part did this have in Israel's history before this? I can ask the craziest question, can't I? What? Yeah. Gath was the city Goliath came from. Philistine. And these Gittites are Philistine. And they're servants of David. And yet they had been deadly enemies at one time of Israel, but they're loyal to David. And there's 600 men. Then the king said to Ittai, the Gittite, wherefore goest thou also with us? Return to thy place and abide with the king, for thou art a stranger and also an exile. Whereas thou camest but yesterday, should I this day make thee go up and down with us, seeing I go whither I may return thou, and take back thy brethren. Mercy and truth be with thee. Well, he felt, I think, that he didn't really owe him anything. And he wouldn't want too big a band, maybe. It'd be too hard to get away, and so on. So he just told him to go back. That might give Absalom a little trouble, too. And yet I answered the king and said, As the Lord liveth, as my lord the king liveth, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also will I serve thee. And David said to Ittai, Go and pass over. And Ittai the Gittite passed over, and all his men and all the little ones were with him. And all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people passed over. The king also himself passed over the brook Kidron. Now that between Jerusalem and the Mount of Olives. Not too far out. From Jerusalem up to Mount of Olives isn't more than a mile and a half. And all the people passed over toward the way of the wilderness. Can you imagine which direction they were going now as they went out of Jerusalem and crossed Kidron, Mount of Olives and so on? Can you imagine which direction they were going? Where they're heading for? Can you anticipate? In your imagination, which direction you think they're taking out of the city? Where did you think? Yeah, I think they're right. Because we find later on they cross the Jordan, and that'd be east. Well, get your geography straight, you see. And Lo Zadok also, and all the Levites, he was a high priest, were with him, bearing the ark of the covenant of God. And they set down the ark of God. And Abiathar went up unto all the people who had done passing out of the city. And the king said unto Zadok, Carry back the ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. That is the tabernacle he built there for that. Not the tabernacles in the wilderness. He built a special one in Jerusalem. They never did bring the tabernacle of the wilderness into Jerusalem. And if ye thus say, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I, let him do to me as seemeth good in thee. And the king said also unto Zadok the priest, I didn't miss anything there, did I? And if ye thus say, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I, let him do to me as seemeth good unto him. The king said also unto Zadok the priest, Art thou not a seer? That is, he had the Urim and Thummim, and he could ask of God and find out things. Now here is something here, we've been going through all of this about Amnon and Absalom, and David going out of the city and so on. All of these things he'd done, trapped by Joab's advice and so forth. We don't find anywhere he was consulting God. That's a mistake that a person can make. David should have consulted God in every step that he made. He'll learn someday. A seer, then, is one who can foretell events and explain the scriptures and so on. He says, Return into the city in peace, and your two sons with you, Ahimaaz, thy son, and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar. See, I will tarry in the plain of the wilderness until there come word from you to certify me. Oh, he's going to have him go back there and kind of oversee things and maybe act as sort of a spy and send word to him. Well, that's all right. David will want to know when the coast is clear so he can come back if ever. Zadok, therefore, and Abiathar carried the ark of God again to Jerusalem, and they tarried there. And David went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet, and wept as he went up, and had his head covered, and he went barefoot. And all the people that was with him covered every one and his head, and they went up weeping as they went up. And one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators of Absalom. Now just imagine here, right at his darkest hour and so on, when they come along and tell him, Ahithophel is also turned away from him. Isn't things going to let up for him? And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Well, that just about happened too. And it came to pass that when David was come to the top of the mount, where he worshipped God, while Hushai the Archite came to meet with his coat rent and earth upon his head, unto whom David said, If thou pass on with me, then thou shalt be a burden unto me. But if thou return to the city, and say unto Absalom, I will be thy servant, O king, as I have been thy father's servant hitherto, so will I now be thy servant. Then mayest thou be for me defeat the counsel of Ahithophel. So he's going to put another spy up there. This was another loyal fellow to David. And then you'll see the plot thickening again. And hast thou not there with thee Zadok and Abiathar the priests? They're already back there. Therefore it shall be that what thing soever thou shalt hear out of the king's house, thou shalt tell to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. Behold, they have there with them their two sons, Ahimaaz, Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's son. And by them ye shall send unto me everything that you can hear. So Hushai, David's friend, came into the city, and Absalom came into Jerusalem. Fine, you make a regular play out of this, didn't you? And when David was a little past the top of the hill, and I might say he went out there to worship God on Mount of Olives, and must have been a common place for people to go and worship. So David went out there. And when David was a little past the top of the hill, behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of asses saddled, and upon them 200 loaves of bread, and 100 bunches of raisins, and 100 of summer fruits, and a bottle of wine. By the way, do you suppose antique collectors today would like one of those bottles? What kind of a bottle was it? You know? Yeah, made out of skins. Mm-hmm. A goat skin, probably. Probably wouldn't have lasted too long then, would it? So when you read the word bottle back here in the Old Testament, that's what it is. They didn't know what we had. Now, they had something there for that. They had earthen jars for water jars, oil, and so on. They didn't call them bottles. They've had those for a long time. I saw one time a little jar, or whatever you want to call it, about so big around, not so high. Look about like some of the big salt cellars they used to have on the table, if you remember what a salt cellar was. And it was made of glass and made before the flood and used for woman to put her rouge and so on. So they had that sort of thing. They had glass before the flood. But I don't think that Noah had any glass over windows in the ark. They needed all the air they could get anyhow with all those animals in there. And there was, no doubt, an open space clear and up under the eaves. So there'd be plenty of air. That's the way it seems to read. And the king said unto Ziba, What meanest thou to these? And Ziba said, And the asses for the king's household to ride on, and the bread and the summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine that such as be faint in the wilderness may drink. So he got everything all prepared. Now remember, Ziba was the manager of Mephibosheth, the servant manager, and David had put the property of Saul and so on into his hands to keep Mephibosheth. And the king said, And where is thy master's son? And Ziba said unto the king, Behold, he abideth at Jerusalem. For he said, Today shall the house of Israel restore me to the kingdom of my father. Looks like there's somebody else running for king too. This is getting to politics. Got about three of them running for king. David, of course, is in power. Then send the king to Ziba. Behold, thine are all that pertained unto Mephibosheth. And Ziba said, I humbly beseech thee that I may find grace in thy sight, my lord, O king. He wasn't telling the truth exactly. And so things have to be straightened out on Mephibosheth later on too. And when King David came to Bahurim, the whole fencer come out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He came forth and cursed still as he came. And he cast stones at David, and at all the servants of King David, and all the people, and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. Well, now, a king as powerful as David could stop that thing in a moment, couldn't he? All he had to do is tell his men to silence that fellow. And thus, Shimei, when he cursed, come out, thou bloody man, and thou man of Belial. The Lord has returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned. And the Lord hath delivered the kingdom of the hand of Absalom, my son. Behold, thou art taken in thy mischief, because thou art a bloody man. Was there any argument that David could give to that, if he wanted to? Not too much. Not that he was a bloody man and he had anything to do with the house of Saul, because he didn't. Saul and his son Jonathan were killed in battle. David had nothing to do with it. In fact, David didn't put any of Saul's family to death. Then said Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, unto the king, "Oh, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over, I pray thee, and take off his head. I'll finish this thing in a hurry." And the king said, "What have I to do with you, ye sons of Zeruiah? So let him curse, because the Lord has said unto him, curse David. Who shall then say, wherefore hast thou done so?" And David said to Abishai and to all his servants, "Behold, my son, which came forth of my bowel, keepeth my life. How much more now may this Benjamite do to him? Let him alone, let him curse, for the Lord hath bidden him. It may be that the Lord will look on mine affliction, that the Lord will requite me good for his cursing this day. It may all work out for good." David has a pretty good outlook on it. And David and his men went by the way. Shimei went along on the hillside over against him, and first as he went, and threw stones at him, and cast dust. And the king and all the people that were with him came weary and refreshed themselves there. And Absalom and all the people, the men of Israel, came to Jerusalem, and Ahithophel with him. Well, I think I had better spot right there. Because this thing is going to click through a little bit. So it takes time to get our machines straightened up and then start with the second part. All right, we'll start in with our second half of our lesson and turn over to Acts 23. We've been studying the life and ministry of Paul. Just taking it mainly from Acts, because we don't get much information from other sources except we cross-reference once in a while. Now, in our last lesson, we just found that Paul had been arrested by the Romans, and the Jews had tried to kill him in the temple, and was going to scourge Paul and